Fire engineering podcasts are sponsored by MSA. Firefighters want to be connected to each other, to dispatch, and to their commanders. MSA has created Lunar, a wireless, handheld device that includes thermal imaging, firefighter ranging, motion alarm, and cloud technology with GPS. It's part of the new connected firefighter platform from MSA. Learn more at msafire.com.
Brothers and sisters, welcome to Fool's Block Talk Radio for Monday, October 14th, 2019. I'm your show host, Robbie Fisher, your education training trustee for Fool's International. I'm excited to have you guys on or checking in with us today. We are pre-recorded for this show. I am working today, so wasn't going to be able to do it live. So this is pre-recorded. But it's been a while since we've been together. I think our last show, I know our last show was July 8th, and we were supposed to do a show in August, but my guest, who I have on tonight, who was supposed to do the show with me, was stuck on the fire lines up in Alaska for a few weeks, so I couldn't get him off the fire lines to record a show. So everybody back at Fire Engineering was able to help out, and we passed our show off to somebody else. So, yeah, so it's been a little bit since we've been together. There's been a lot of things going on in the Fool's organization since then. We've been through convention. Convention this year was in Colorado. The NOCO, the 5280, Front Range, and Pikes Peak Fool's hosted convention this year. It was a great convention. Everybody had a good time. The weather was great. Training was phenomenal. You know, we want to give special thanks to Kevin Fields. We know how involved he was in organizing the convention and running everything, and had support of everybody else around him. But if it wasn't for Kevin, I think it would have been really tough to pull it off. He was there every single day, and giving us support, driving us around everywhere, picking us up from the airports and everything. So, Kevin did a phenomenal job. Like I said, the weather there was great. The training was great. Keynote speaker was, Dave McGrail. So, you can't beat that. So, but what we did decide, is where we're going to be for 2020. And, Jimmy Myers and his group of hooligans, were able to, convince everybody. I mean, they were the only ones putting in, but they were able to convince everybody that, the 25th anniversary of convention needs to come back to Florida, where it kind of all started. So we will be going to Florida in 2020. Expect to see more coming out, as soon as they get more, and, you know, we'll be communicating it out through, podcasts and, through emails and president's meetings. So, but, yeah, plan on that. I would suspect that we'll be out there sometime in, September or October again. The other thing is, we have elections going on for Fool's, international e-board positions. At the president's meeting convention, Richie Stack announced that he will not be seeking re-election for the president's position, which is one of the three that is up. The other two are treasurer and, my position, education training trustee. So, if you are interested in any one of those positions or interested in being considered for some further position on the International E-Board, send an email to President Richie Stack so that we can schedule you in, or they're going to schedule you in for interviews. And then, if you have any questions, you can reach out to Richie or any of the members of the e-board, and we'll hopefully be able to answer your questions regarding that. But if you are interested, you're going to have to submit a letter and get an interview scheduled up. If you have any questions about the e-board positions, what's expected of each position, or kind of the process, you can refer to Article 7 of the International's Articles of Association, and that it's all covered right there. So that's it for news. Let's just get on to my guest and what we're going to be talking about. So like I said, this is we had hoped to put the second show in August with my guest, and Ben Flegel had shared the airways with me in July on the 8th, and we talked leadership as we typically do when Ben and I get together. And we were hoping to do part two of that in August, and so now it's been pushed to October. So today I was able to trap Ben. I should say today, you know, the day we recorded this, I was able to trap Ben at his firehouse while some training was going on. And I caught about 55 minutes of his time, and we talked about several things. When we were talking about mentoring, we talked about leading from the front, and we talked about, you know, some of the intangibles that come with being a leader, and you know, to quote Ben, or, you know, paraphrase what Ben had said during our discussion, is like, that you cannot write a perfect leadership manual or book. It just is not going to happen. We can put a lot of stuff in a book, in a document, but really it comes down to leadership is intangible, and it's just something that you end up working on your entire life. It's not something that, I don't know if you ever attain it and become successful at it, but it is something that you should always be seeking. So, well, without further ado, I'm going to stop talking. Well, actually, I'm going to start back up here when I play this, but I'm going to turn it over to my conversation with Ben Flegel. Thank you for listening.
You know, we've talked before, Ben. I think our last show was in July, if I remember correctly. It was like the first part of July. And then we were going to do part two at the next show, which was going to be in August. And you and I were trying to line up our calendars, and then you left for, I don't know what it was, 2 weeks or so, to the some fire up in Alaska, and we never got to meet up, and we never got to do two. So
that's right.
We're finally here. We're finally here.
Yes,
we're going to do part two in October. As always, I love talking leadership with you, and I just meant, hell, I just like chatting with you just in general. It always seems to fall to leadership, but I love our time that we get to chat and talk. And we were together in at the convention in Colorado, and so we had a good time. We got to hang and share some libations together, but we're going to be talking about leadership today. So where are you today, Ben? I know you're at work, but why don't you give us just a little breakdown of what's going on today?
I'm at Station 12 in Fairbanks, Alaska. And the guys are out training in the back. We call that the training pad. It's the closest thing we have to a training center in our department, and it's a couple hundred square feet of pavement with a mobile prop and some ladder props, and they're out there running scenarios for the probies right now. I'm on duty as the captain on ladder 12, and that means I've got a two-piece house, one medic, one quint, and we're guarding the south side of Fairbanks.
Lovely. You know, everybody's going to want to ask, so I'll do it, or they're going to want to know, is there snow on the ground in Fairbanks already?
It depends on where you're at. It's come a little early. Usually we have another week or two to go, but there's snow in the hills, and there's been snow out where I live to the southeast area known as North Pole. And there's about 3 inches on the ground out there. There was snow in Fairbanks already, but it melted off. So we're kind of hovering around 35 degrees during the day and about 20 at night, 25 at night. And we'll probably be minus 20 by the end of the month. Ooh. It changes quick.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. And I've been up there a few times, and I kind of like the environment when it's nice and chilly like that, you know. So I know it gets cold, but it's also, it takes the right person to be in that really cold weather.
It does. I didn't think I was that person, but and sometimes as I get older, I'm thinking I'm ceasing to be that person. As arthritis and all that takes over, but yeah.
Gets a little harder to do it in really cold weather. So, all right, well, great. The last question, since I know you're on duty, is what's the dinner plan? What are you guys eating tonight, you know?
Oh, I'm making the spaghetti sauce. And we're going to have Italian hot and spicy sausage mixed in with some almost homemade sauce, because I'm going to have a short period of time to make it. But we're going to combine that with spaghetti squash noodles.
Ooh.
And yeah, we're looking forward to that. The lieutenant's on a low carb diet, and and I'm with him on that.
You know, that's the thing that's probably I think most of our listeners are probably laughing, is it? If there's one thing that's changing in the station, is like, hey, who's buying in for dinner? No, I'm on this, or I'm on that, or I can only eat this. And so it's getting a little bit more challenging at the fire station for that. But
that's true, but I will go a long ways to get that company meal done for the purpose of unity and cohesion. So I will eat Lent. I will eat non-carb. I'll eat keto. Whatever the guys need me to eat, I'll eat, because it's more important to me that we sit around that table together.
I mean, I totally agree, and we're kind of getting into it, and we haven't even just pulled up one of the questions, but we had – you know, when I was on Ladder 72 with Chad Berg and our crews, we had a guy that we had debit days because of our staffing. So we'd get a guy that comes in and works that's not normally assigned to the crew. And he was a vegan. And so I know, you know, most everybody's like, oh, God, vegans. But, you know, the cool thing was with Tom is that he didn't eat meat with us, but you know, if we cooked the meal so that it was close to vegan as possible, he would eat with us. But he always wanted to cook for us. And, of course, one time I said, yeah, Tom, we'd love for you to cook a meal. And, you know, Berg and everybody's like, oh, you got to be kidding me. Oh. But, you know, the one thing I will say about vegetarians and vegans is that they have to be really good with spices and seasonings and all that kind of stuff to make the food really good. And it's not all just tofu, but Tom had some phenomenal recipes, made really good food. You know, it was no meat, but it was really good tasting food. And I agree with you. It's just like, it was more important that we shared the meal together, and I will make sacrifices for that as well. So yeah, I mean, that's a key to being part of the company.
Oh yeah. And in particular, depending on how the house runs, that's where the informal or the formal leader really invests in relationships. You know, you can let the folks know what you're stewing about, if you're cranky about something, if you're irritated, or if you're really pleased with something, or if you want to pass on a message, or, you know, you can do it with finesse at the kitchen table in a way that they'll get the message and go, oh, you know, the old man's putting down the law here, without feeling like they got to get their back up and defend themselves.
You know why I think that works really well is that because everybody's hungry and wants to eat. And so you can only talk for so long before you know you've got to, you know, you want to shovel your mouth full of food. And so you're what piece that you're going to give them, advice or complaint or, you know, just acknowledgement for good work, it's going to be in shorter sets. because you're going to, you know, everybody's eating. You know, if we were just sitting around and trying to kill time, then one person can dominate the conversation because they'll just, you know, take all the air out of the room and just keep on talking and not letting it be more of a community type event where, you know, there's interaction both ways. And sometimes that needs to be prodded with the newer, younger firefighter that's not accustomed to that, you know, and the right person, maybe the informal leader, like a driver or a senior man or girl in the firehouse, prods the new probie, the new firefighter, to maybe something that was said by the LT or the captain, and then, you know, digs a little bit deeper and gets the new person to get involved, to get engaged, you know?
Yeah.
So, well, that's a good start to it that, you know, we go to meals and we're already talking about formal and informal leaders. But one of the things I'm involved with a Facebook group called the Young Officers on Fire. And so some of the things that have been going on in this Facebook group area is just I just thought it would be great to take some of these things that they're talking about and that's being posted on there. And I don't know if you are or part of our group or not, but I thought,
I've seen the site. I've seen it a couple of times.
So I just thought, you know what, I'm going to go to one of my favorite leadership guys and throw some of these out to you and see what you think and just see where it goes for us. So, you know, the first one is, and I've seen this before and I kind of got the feeling, you know, I know what it means, but I just wanted to open it up and discuss it between you and I, but live your interview. You know, I think it gets brought up. It seems like, especially when you're new as a firefighter and you're trying to get hired somewhere, you would say just about anything you can to get that job. You just want to pull down the job. And I think it kind of talks to that like, be who you say you want to be. Yeah. Do you agree? Yeah. Or?
I never did that because I'm a quirky kind of guy. But I totally understand that. And that everybody I've ever known kind of sets themselves up that way, and I know a few people that fight it, but they're so desperate to get the job they end up just saying, yeah, I'll say whatever you want me to say, and I don't agree with that. I don't think it's the right way to go. And even when I was just coming into the fire service, I never did that. I'm really bad about showing who I am right up front. I just kind of rip the coat open and go, this is who I am. This is why I want the job. And I don't care what you think of it. And that has cost me a couple jobs.
Well, honesty pays. And if you're, and sometimes it can bite you in the butt and in not in a bad way, but just in that they decide that you're not the right person. But exactly, I would say I mean, that's what you want, right? You don't want to go and work somewhere or do something, or, you know, if we put it into perspective of a promotion, you don't want to be promoted into a position that you're just not a good fit for whatever reason. And that
right.
By being,
every,
but
oh, every interview is a 50-50 deal. They're looking at you as a candidate. They're candidating to you. If you want that job, you know, not every department is a good match. And I've known plenty of people that get hired and they're like, man, I really don't like it here. And they discover that very quickly after they get hired. And so the job I have now, I interviewed the fire chief. It's a small town department, so it was a little easier to do that. But I called him up and I had 11 questions and he invited me over. We had a talk in the headquarters station and I'm pretty sure that landed me the job, but what I was doing was checking to see if I really could invest myself in an organization that is built the way this one is. It's very unique.
Yeah. What about for promotion? it's a little bit different, and maybe does this phrase, is it trying to like speak to figure out who you are and what you stand for, and work on those things and take those into your interview and work them. What do you think?
I think interviews for promotion are very different. I still believe you have to show who you are. if you are directly opposed to the stance the organization takes, it's really hard to do that and expect to get promoted. If you're on the assault, where you've been known as the guy that complains about the department's tactics or strategy or, policies in treating employees, and then you try to convince them that you're going to back them up on that, it's not going to fly very well. I think honesty is always the best policy, but that also doesn't mean that the interview is the place to go on the warpath. And that's hard for me. I blew my first battalion's interview because I was not in a good mental space. The timing wasn't right. I was testing to replace a chief that had passed away, and I didn't feel that we should be testing yet. Hadn't been gone long enough, and I let that affect my performance, and I was brutally honest, and that was very bad. There is a place where there are people who value honesty and integrity no more so than other folks, perhaps, but their perception of honesty and integrity is not colored with the reality of being a human being in life. I've known people that quit departments because somebody lacked integrity and they couldn't work under that person. Well, there's a lot of places. I was in the Marine Corps, and there were a lot of Marines without integrity, even though it's one of the number one values and character traits. Human beings struggle to live up to that. And I think if you go into an interview and are honest when it comes to promotion, you're honest about who you are, but you need to you're trying to convince that board that you're not going to turn their fire department upside down if you get promoted. And that's a hard sell if you have a reputation, especially like many of us fools do, for being the apple cart spillers. We like to tip things upside down and change the world. And so then you go to be one of the white shirt boys, and they doesn't always work that way.
Yeah, it's a very tough moving up into chief's positions and trying to be somebody like that. But I guess what I would say with that statement is that, really trying to figure out what you stand for and what's your belief system. And I mean, don't just pick the stuff that's real easy, the low hanging fruit, like, oh, I'm into integrity and I'm all these. It's like, if you have a beef with what's going on in your organization and you're looking at promotion, have you prepared to be able to look at that from different perspectives, or do you just have one perspective, right? And so if you're thinking, hey, you know what, I'm not really into Quince and I want to have a department that is all, standard truck operations, and the chief is, he came from St. Louis and is really into Quince, you have to come at that at a different way, and you have to prepare knowing that if you came in honestly and said, you know what, Quince suck, and you're not going to get yourself anywhere. But if you came in knowing and prepared for your interview, knowing that, man, the chief is really in on this. And this is kind of where I, try to share the, 10 pounds of pressure, 100% of the time, is that you can't come in there and just punch the guy in the face over something or the gal in the face over it. You got to come in soft and just make some contact and stay in contact and figure out what are the angles, not just an angle, but figure out the different perspectives. Maybe there's some common ground in there, and learning to kind of steer your interview in that direction versus coming at it, you know, like living somebody that you're not or living something that's not. So.
Right. And especially with a promotional interview, the people interviewing you, as long as your department's not too large, they probably know who you are and they know your reputation and you're not going to fool anybody. So I think it's very important. If I have a battalion chief's interview coming up again. And I have a reputation for being very hands-on. Everybody knows I like to be with the fellas out doing the work. And I'm not real fond of administrative work. And I've had people tell me, you're going to make a great battalion chief, but you're going to hate it. So that's the perception. And I get it. And I view part of my job in the interview is to convince the department that investing in a hands-on guy in an administrative role isn't a bad bet. Because it behooves me to take those strengths and turn them around for the department's advantage at that level. And that includes, I look forward to mentoring other captains. I look forward to developing the chief's role, understanding what those eager captains are trying to achieve and how do I help them move forward, being the type of person that I'm geared to be. And so how do I convey that in the interview? Because to me, that's the value the department gets out of a guy like me is they're asking themselves, if we bring this person up higher in the rank, what are we going to receive for that effort? Would it be better to keep them down on the operational side? So if I want to be up there, I have to show them how I'm going to manage my talents, not just overcome my three weaknesses and my six strengths. You know, I've got some really good talents at this point. They know them well. How am I going to apply them at that level? And hopefully they're going to go, wow, we didn't think about that. That's going to be an asset. That's what I'm trying to achieve in an interview.
Yeah, absolutely. Because if you went in there and just said, hey, I'm a hands-on guy and we're going to do hands-on stuff, and you know that that's not going to work for you. But being able to realize that you are a hands-on guy and you know the benefits of being more hands-on, but then just trying to create or understand the direction that you need to go, because the role changes. You can't be, you know, in the smaller departments, you probably could get away with a little bit more, but the role changes as you move up and you have to accept those roles. Otherwise, you should not move up, because you know, don't cheat the system, basically, or don't cheat the department, because you'll end up ruining things. So, but I think that's where it's being honest to yourself and realizing what needs to change and what things you can do to change yourself, or the things that you know that will benefit you and how you can use your strengths to benefit the department, and being able to showcase those during your interview. And that's living my interview, meaning that I know that I'm going to be this way. I'm going to go in there. I'm going to give them what they need to hear, but I'm also going to tell them that this is how I'm going to connect the two together. And then afterwards, when you're given the position, for God's sakes, do what you say you said you're going to do, right?
Yeah, right. Absolutely.
Jesus. You mentioned mentoring. So one of the pieces that's up on the Facebook group is about mentoring, and in some respects it's about what's one of your recent bosses, one of the things that they've shared with you or that you've learned from. So I'm connecting the two together, but so who have you mentored with throughout your career? You know, what kinds of things can you share with us that you've learned from those individuals or the individual?
You know, I've been thinking about this since the Fool's Convention, and one of the questions that was asked about your mentors over the years got me going. We always talk about mentoring, and I don't view mentoring the way it seems most people do. To me, a mentor, I realize a mentor can be someone that's not even aware you're paying attention. You can absorb things from that person, and quite often they'll be referred to as a mentor. I, you know, one of my many mentors, Well, I think to be truly mentored at a deep level, the mentoree has to go to the mentor and say, I would like you to guide me. And that senior person or that peer needs to be accepting of that. Then you get a true mentoring relationship. Instead of just observing, because you can misinterpret observations. But when you do it that way, you have question and answer, and quite often the answer is another question. I mean, a guiding light versus a black and white statement. And I would have to say there's not a lot of people that I identify as mentors in that way, because I just have a very high standard, I guess, for someone I would call a mentor. Certainly, Doug Schrage has mentored me a great deal currently in learning how to manage the modern fire service. He's taken me out of the dark ages in a lot of ways in dealing with the new generation and how to manage their insatiable need to ask questions and understanding you need to have an answer for them, which just makes you a better officer. But also he has really helped me see how important human dignity is, to the point where I changed my behavior in the firehouse, constantly working towards servant leadership, and to an extent where, like, right as we speak right now, my lieutenant is outside doing my job. I felt he needed to be given that role. He doesn't normally work for me, and I think he's quite capable. He's a Navy vet, and I've turned over the whole probie checkoff to him. I'm watching it through the window. Everything's very organized. They've got a plan. I'm pushing things down, decisions down, authority down. I take the risk. And I learned that not only from Doug, but a few other folks that I've observed. But Doug is the one that has spent time coaching me on it. And I highly value that. But another mentor way back when was a guy named Captain Drake. And I didn't know him very well. He worked in our house in Orange County at Station 21. And I was just a paid call guy. I saw him around the firehouse a lot. But I went to the LA riots with him on his engine. And he taught me in just a 24-hour period a standard to follow as a leader. There was never a time during that riot where he didn't know where I was, or he wasn't able to get a hold of me, grab me, throw me in the truck. If we ventured out of the road and into the property to manage a hose line or pull something down with a pike pole, he was right next to me. He took full ownership over my safety in that riot. And what I didn't realize at the time, but I see now as I look back, is that I became a part of his, he owned me. It was months and years after that, as long as I was in that department, he would touch base with me and check on me and point out opportunities to me in the department. And at the time, you know, being young and who I was, I didn't get it. But I look back on that and I marvel at the fact that I really only spent one 24-hour period working for that guy. And yet he owned a part of my career, and he took possession of it and made sure that he fulfilled his responsibility. And I'd never forgotten that role. And even without realizing I was doing it, he became my first role model as an officer, a fire officer. So those are two of the ones I can think of right off the bat. There have been many others. There were guys in the Marine Corps, and there's been guys in the fire service but only a few were people that I literally said to them, I want to learn from you. And they accepted that and stuck to it.
Yeah. Kind of tie into it. It is totally relationship oriented. I mean, it has so much, because back in 2011, myself and one of my counterparts, one of my colleagues that I work with, we put together a firefighter mentoring program, and we were kind of building it off of Starbucks. I had a friend that was a director at Starbucks. So, and what we got out of this year and a half long process was the relationship between the mentor and the mentee, and that it can't be established. It has to be desired. So the mentor cannot reach out to a mentee and say, hey, I'm going to mentor you. But the mentee, by all means, has to reach out to the mentor and say, I wish to gain knowledge from you, or I wish to do further. And that is, it's a one-way street, but once things get going, it is definitely by far a two-way avenue.
Yeah.
And that, that's the experience that we had, because when we put together this mentoring program, we assigned they were not probies, they were coming off of probation, so they were young firefighters, two company officers, and it turned out that it just did not work the way that we wanted it to. I mean, it was the biggest lesson, probably the best lesson we learned through that process, is that it needs to be, the mentee needs to go out and seek that. So, So, I mean, I want to catch everybody up, because Doug is the fire chief of your department, and he was formerly a chief officer in Anchorage. And so he's also with the, Western Division for the IFC and all that stuff. So he is well involved in the fire service, and especially into management and leadership. And so that's a good one to have. And I've met Doug a couple times when I've been up there, and we've been at conferences together. Really good guy. So I could see how that would definitely help. And it's good to see somebody as gruff as you are, kind of get, I don't want to say boundaries, but kind of popped in and kept in between, the banks of the river and get you learning,
But it's funny that you point that out, because that is a big part of it. Doug and I have some similarities, but we're also very different. And, when I'm doing my drill instructor thing, for example, it doesn't make him comfortable. We're trying to achieve the same thing. He wants to give a lot of grace and allow people to make mistakes and hope that they will, on their own accord, turn around and come into line. Whereas I'm much more of a jarhead about it. I want to outline the behavior expectations early on, remove gray areas, and then I can hold people accountable. That Doug likes the gray areas, and he's very comfortable operating in them. So he has taught me to work in the gray a lot more comfortably than I was before. I used to be a real rule book guy until Doug came along, and he's helped me to understand the concept of, we don't need a lot of SOPs as long as the expectations are lined out. And then you're given a lot of leeway to operate, but if things go bad, you better be able to justify what you were doing.
Yeah,
and there's so much freedom in that.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think that it lends itself to, just as a firefighter or a young officer, looking for somebody to mentor with, is like, you don't always have to pick somebody that is. I mean, I would probably say don't pick somebody that is like you, because that's just having somebody tell you how good you are, reaffirming what you already believe. You need somebody that is like you, not exactly like you, but has maybe some different perspectives, so they can open you up and get you to learn something and pick up some things. I mean, that's when we do the best in our growth. You could put it into sports. You don't make any gains if you're not suffering a little bit, you know?
Yes.
And so you have to have those failures to really gain a lot. Otherwise, you know, if it's too easy and you're just doing what you already know, then you're not going to gain anything in the end of it when it comes to mentoring.
And that's the absolute truth. Why be mentored by someone who's a carbon copy of you? You're not going to learn to think outside your own box. And a perfect illustration of that is standing at the president's dinner at FRI. And I forget where we were, but Doug is introducing me to the officers of the IAFC. And these guys are, you know, polished. They're in dinner coats with bow ties and gold lace and all kinds of the Maltese crosses. And I'm just the line officer in my two stripes and my mustache down below my chin line. And he didn't flinch. He had no hesitation in introducing me. And you can see him looking me over and I'm like, I've got like a string hanging off my shoe or something. And, you know, looking around going, shit, you know, told you not to bring me here, boss.
That's good. So, I mean, we'll just wrap up mentoring a little bit and move on to the next question. But I think that we can agree that if you're looking at advancement, I mean, you don't even have to be looking at advancement, but if you really are looking at becoming a leader in your organization or whatever you're doing, you really should be seeking somebody to gain some knowledge from, and challenge you and question you. And, like personally right now, I'm working with, a retired, deputy chief out of Seattle. And, we're talking some operational stuff, and he questions a lot of things that not from a negative standpoint, but he asked me questions about like justify this on the roof or justify this action on the fire ground. That would be considered probably very aggressive, but he's not necessarily telling me no. He's just saying, hey, let's have a conversation about it. Let me hear what your thought process is on it. And he's got me to think differently on a couple different things where I'm like, wow, man, maybe I should look in this direction versus that one. And it's been good. You know, it's really been, I mean, I enjoy my time. We meet every, you know, like month or maybe it's been about every month for the last few months. And I'm, you know, go there with the intention that we're going to spend an hour or two talking shop and going through some things and I'm gaining some nuggets. And, you know, this last one, it was 4 hours. And I said, man, I got to let you go. I got to get home for something. But it was great. But I think, you know, I'm just talking a lot right now, but I think you would agree that probably mentoring is something really important, right?
Yeah, and the relationship you just described, I think, is rare and extremely valuable for a junior officer. But also, there's the other aspect of mentoring that I don't really call mentoring, and I referred to that earlier. You and I are sharpening each other constantly. Iron sharpens iron. That's out of the good book. And I believe in it wholeheartedly. It's often we refer to that as mentoring. And I suppose it is. But there's different levels of mentoring. And that's what we're defining here is there's that iron sharpening action that we do with peers or good friends in the fire service. There's the people that we observe from a distance and go, wow, I want to be like that guy, that we may get a few words from, at a conference or something. And we get all giggly about it and tell everybody on Facebook that we got to talk with someone and got a selfie with them. And then there's that guy that you may not even like, but you're able to connect with them and you're able to learn from them and you can spit something out and they can respond with, no, that's not exactly what I meant. What I meant is this. Never quite giving you the right answer, letting you work your way through it, but pointing you in the direction that you need to go in. And asking you some questions like, what happened? And what was my role in what happened? Like, if it's a training event, how did the training event go? What was your role in that training event? How did your behavior affect that training event? And now what are you going to do about that after we've reviewed it? How are you going to change it or improve on it or firm it up? That's my viewpoint on mentoring. It's actually a very personal thing.
It is. And I completely agree. I mean, there's a lot of things. I like how I know you always bring in the good book in whatever we're talking about. And I think that because we've seen it a lot, there's a lot of pictures out there on Facebook and especially with fire service, you know, iron sharpens iron. But I completely feel that just conversation that we end up having, that it is a form of mentoring, as you said, but it's not really mentoring. It's just it's almost like lion cubs wrestling with each other. They're practicing their skills, right? And they're teaching each other. Because one day when they get bigger, they're going to end up having to, you know, utilize their skill set to survive. And so I think a lot of these conversations that we have and, you know, we have with others in the fire service, especially with the fools, is that, you know, they might be – sometimes they can be heated and it's not intended to be like a mentoring session. But it is – it's kind of like it's a training session. It's taking us and allowing us to kind of work on our skills, work on our thought process, our approach, all of these different things. And it's a very vital aspect of our learning. And, you know, that's just to say, just sharing it, that we're not even talking about the next step or even the step up above that, which is the formal mentoring process. And I would say for sure, to be a good company officer, a good chief officer, you should be with colleagues on a regular basis discussing many different aspects, you know, fire ground operations, personnel issues, leadership styles, I'll even say talking politics, and because that really helps you understand, society and how we, you know, how we deal with basically the shit that goes on in society too. So, and then on top of it, you should have some formal mentors or at least one that you can check in with on a regular basis. You good with where we're at with that? Are you?
Yep.
Yep. All right. Yep, we're moving on.
I am.
We're moving on.
I had more thoughts, but if I voice them, it's going to turn into another hour and a half.
Well, no, we won't. You can voice them. I mean, we're at 40 minutes. So if you want to, we can just stay on this for another 10, 15 minutes and we can call it the night. So, I mean, we don't have to go on to my third question.
But I like the third one too.
Okay. Well, then we're going
to move on. I don't want to miss out. Yeah.
You jot down your note and we'll sharpen iron together another day and we'll just talk about that one. Maybe we can share it with everybody else. All right, so the other one is this is a post. I think it just came up on our Facebook page. I'm talking about the Young Officers on Fire page, and I know this is Fool's Blog Talk Radio, but I'm kind of tying two things together here. But it has to do with about leading from the front, and you know, you see things all the time. I shouldn't say you see things all the time. You see things get posted and it's like, look at this chief. Look at them lead from the front. And you hope it's genuine and that this individual does this on a regular basis. And it's not just, you know, the opportunity to have a token picture or, you know, to get into that. But I just wanted to, because I love your thoughts on a lot of things, I just wanted to kind of have a conversation about leading from the front. I know in the Marines, it's a big deal, so I knew you were going to have a lot to say about it.
Well, leading in the front can get you shot.
Get you shot?
Yeah.
Well, what's that mean? I mean, it means you're taking on responsibility, right? You know?
Well, in the old days, and people, the reason I bring that up is because several times in my career when I've been voicing enthusiasm about a certain thing, and your peers kind of go, yeah, you're kind of out there in front and nobody's supporting you on that. That happens to the 20%ers. We get out there and we're like, this is the way, follow me. And you just start taking hits. And a lot of the 80%ers pull back and start sheltering and let you just take it. And you find yourself out there in front charging the German machine guns. And you're just, come on, guys. And everybody's like, yeah, he's on his own show there, boss. So
it's almost like, I don't know if you remember, oh, shoot. It's almost like Will Ferrell when he tells his wife, "Honey, we're going streaking." And she's like, what? And he thinks everybody's behind him and he's the only one, you know? Yeah. That's the visual I got when you're like, come on. And everybody else is in their foxholes and they've dug in. Yeah. And you're out on the charge.
Well, in the old days, leading from the front was a lot like that. Nowadays, leading from the front means a lot of different things. And around the firehouse, that can mean being the one. At least in my perception, that means I'm out vocalizing what the operational folks need to get their job done. I'm also vocalizing the expectations of the department so that the people below me know what is expected of them. So I'm that middleman that everything revolves around as a company officer. But also when it comes to expectations within the crew, there's a sharp difference between a crew that is led by the informal leader, who is the more physically aggressive and skill oriented person, and the crew that's led by the official leader, who is skills oriented and hands on. I've always gravitated towards being the former one. I want to be out there with the crew. I want them to know that I'm capable of doing the job too, not just teaching it and not just saying, get it done. And I'm also not afraid to let them know that they might be better at it than me. Because what I'm bringing to bear really is not so much the way I handle a chainsaw or a pair of irons. What I'm really bringing to bear is the experience that goes around the use of that tool. And it's not my job to be hands-on, but I let them know that I'm capable just enough that my experience has a basis and they know I know what I'm talking about. So that can be leading from the front when it comes to operational. But you're also leading in the front when you're sitting around the kitchen table. And you can participate in the conversation, or you can stay out of it and mind your own business. And you can see those differences in a company, an officer who's involved in the people and an officer who's not. You're going to get the shots are going to be taken. If you are taking the department stance on something and the crew's not happy about it, you have to be prepared to manage that. That's standing out front. If you go into the meeting with the chief and everybody's gathered there and nobody wants to bring up the elephant in the room and you're the one that says, well, I guess I won't get promoted this year, and you start talking about the elephant, that's leading from the front. I believe in it strongly. Like when you're telling your daughter's boyfriend you don't mind going back to jail. It's the same thing.
You know, well, you said a lot of things there, so I just catch one of them. The importance, and not that you should be trying to improve your credibility, but there is credibility that is gained by doing your job, taking the front, and taking on some big challenges. And that, you know, as a company officer or as a battalion chief, or even as a new officer coming in, taking on some of those and standing up for the things that you believe in, and not basically collapsing like a, you know, like a house of cards when you're put on the spot. And those things early on in your career, you don't have to take on every battle. You don't have to establish a, you know, a beachfront on everything. But I think there's going to come a time early on in your promotion where you're going to have the opportunity to take that challenge, that risk, and everybody's going to be watching you. And when you do it, you stand to gain a decent amount of credibility by holding to your position, you know? And, yes. And I think it's important. I think it's important for the crews to understand that that's what the officer should be doing. You know, good officers do those things on a regular yes. basis.
I would venture to say that if the officer does not have those aspects in mind the entire time they're in the firehouse, I don't think they're being effective at the job they're currently supposed to be doing. A lot of guys you meet, their mind is all about where they want to go in the job, and they're preparing for that, and their brain is on that. I think that's important. But when I pull into the fire station in the morning, whether my wife drives me or I drive myself, I sit there for a few minutes before I get out of the car, because I know once I get out of the vehicle, I cease to be who I am off duty, and I'm going to take on the mantle that I wear. And that means I can't be everybody's friend. I will be attentive to detail that I normally don't want to be attentive to. I'll have to represent the department. I have to represent my people and all those integrity issues. And if I'm not dialed into that, then I'm constantly behind the eight ball or not confronting them at all. You know where I'm going with that? I marvel at officers who view themselves as simply higher paid jump seaters, because to me that there's no engagement there with the immense burden that a company officer or a battalion officer even more so has to carry.
Yeah, you hear that? I'm a worker that just gets to make the final decision.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, everybody comments about how I like to use rank. I'm not as stringent on that as people think. I think you and Berg had a great relationship in the firehouse, where it was Chad and Rob most of the time. But if a stranger came in, or if you were doing something official, it was Lou immediately, because that relationship was so well understood. If you have that luxury, that's awesome. But I think in a firehouse where people are on debit days or shift trades constantly, and the captain is from some other place, lieutenant's from some other place, at which you have a lot of departments where the flux is constant, I don't think that's a luxury. I think rank needs to be recognized, because there's a lot of officers that don't want to be held responsible to their rank. And that's where I got that from. It wasn't because I wanted people to recognize my rank. It was because I needed to be reminded, or needed to remind my officer that, hey, you're responsible for me. Don't try to shirk that duty. Mm-hmm. I'm calling you Cap, because you're shirking it. You're trying to get away from it. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to hold you to it. You are where the buck stops. And so yeah. I'm not going to call you John. I'm going to call you Cap.
It is. Yeah. And I think you make a great point there, because I've never really looked at it that way. But, you know, you remember when you first got promoted to captain, it's different hearing you being called, you know, hearing somebody address you as captain when you first get promoted, because it's not something you're used to hearing. I mean, it's just like when I got promoted to battalion. As much as I wanted to be a battalion, and I had, you know, had worked really hard to get there, when people started, you know, hey chief, and you're like, ugh, it's almost like a punch every time you got it. But it ties to what you're saying here. It's that it's holding me accountable. They acknowledge me as the chief, the battalion chief, or as a captain in your case, and that it's reminding you that there comes a lot of responsibility with it, you know? And
absolutely.
Yeah. So I've never really looked at it that way, but I have felt it. Definitely have felt it as through, you know, through the ranks and promoting up, that every single time you take on a new one, you're reminded every single time somebody says that. So that is key.
And that's something that the military brings into the fire service, and it's resented by people that don't understand it. But if you go hang out with a bunch of jarheads, the captain, the lieutenant, they're given, just like in the fire service, they're given a nickname or a comfortable reference to their authority. And that's their name, not Joe or Mike or Steve. It's Cap or Skipper. Skipper's a big one with Marines. And that what that is literally I can walk into a guy that's filling in and say, hey, Skipper. And I'm saying, I recognize your authority. You've got the rank and you better perform, because the respect of all of these Marines is dependent on your ability to handle that title. Like Captain Ruvolo walking into Rescue 2 and having to fight for his position back in the day. There's an expectation with an elite group, especially, that an officer that's going to lead us had better be with his salt. You know, Brunicini used to talk about his daughter when she was a lieutenant, and her first ride her as a lieutenant in this house that she was working in for the day, and the driver wasn't paying attention to her instructions. So she picked up the clipboard and said, are you going to, you going to keep doing your own thing, or am I going to hit you with this clipboard? And she got his respect right away. she took the reins on that. It's not about rank. It's not about the title. It's not about the bugles on your collar. If you have to resort to those things to get your way, you're failing.
Yep.
Or at the very least, the situation is so bad that those things are required to get control of it. But in easier times, that is your folks recognizing the position you hold in their lives. And it's something to take pride in, but it's also a huge responsibility.
Yep. Well, hey, I'm going to put together 20 minutes of material, and hopefully we get to, you know, 30 to 40 minutes, and we're already at 55 minutes. So, I know we can keep on talking, and I'll just keep it short. We'll just we'll wrap it up here, just because we can always use the material for something else down the road. But I truly respect your leadership, and I respect your friendship, and I love having these conversations with you. I wish you were closer so that you were, easier to sit down and have a beer with, or a whiskey with, or a cigar, and just talk shop, and that we didn't have to do it over Skype, which most people don't realize. We're recording this over Skype, so you don't get to see how animated Ben is as we're talking. You just get to hear his voice on this blog talk. But I love you, man, and enjoy our time talking together. But I'll leave you with the last words, and then we'll close this out.
I guess my last words would be that you humble me, Rob, and that's why I love you so much. I'm learning from you all the time, and so these conversations just flow, because I'm so excited to be able to talk with you at the same time. In the process, we pull out some things that we don't realize we're going to talk about, which is that's what's so great about it. Leadership, I've said this several times to you, and I know you'll chuckle, but it's an intangible. It's hard to define. You cannot really make a leadership manual and get it right, because it's a human thing. And there's no way to box it up exactly. And it'll never end. I mean, you can talk about it forever. So I'm sure we will get back at this very shortly.
We sure will. I tell you what, Cap, I'll let you get out to your Proby and your LT out there and be a part of some of that fun on the training ground. And you guys have a great dinner and be smart tonight. And, you know, wish you the best.
All right, man. Talk to you soon. Thanks, man. Bye.